I'm Jeff Economy, host of Snack Point Charlie, heard the first and third Wednesday of every month from 10 p.m. to midnight here on WGXC. I'm here today to talk with Mark Hosler and John Lidecker of Negative Land, who will be performing their new program, We Can Really Feel Like We're Here, with visual artist Sue C. as part of WGXC's Drive-In Extravaganza on May 31st. That's Matmos, Rodney Allen Greenblatt, and Negative Land plus Sue C. at the Greenville Drive-In on May 31st. Tickets available at wavefarm.org/drive-in.
I'm actually imitating the sound of the phone ringing from the beginning of Uncle Albert, the middle portion of Uncle Albert Admiral Halsey with his phone call, because that's the first time, because I would have been age 11? No. Something like, 11.
Remember,
yeah,
that was like 72.
I probably ever heard what a British phone ring sounds like. And I think that's actually just Paul imitating the sound of a phone ringing with his mouth.
Very likely. I mean, I don't know if that was the first time I heard it.
Recording in progress.
Oh, sorry. Starting the... Okay.
Hey, is John there? Hi, John.
Am I in the mix?
I see his name on a screen.
Yeah, he has some terrible facial disfigurements. He doesn't want you to see
him. I should be... Can you not hear me?
Oh, I can hear you.
Okay, good. Good, good, good.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm just upstairs recuperating from last night, but as long as I'm audible.
I'm downstairs. We're in the same house, but we thought that the sound would be better for you if we were at separate locations. So we can really feel like we're not here.
Oh, nice segue. Leads right in. You're so professional with that.
Mark's good at branding.
Well, you know, now that we're into the conversation for the radio, actually tell me more about We Can Really Feel Like We're Here show. I mean, I don't want you to spoil all the surprises, but
No, we don't want to spoil it. But John, what do you want to say?
I don't know. You know what the set is too. What's your take on it, Mark?
It's Negative Land's weird ass sideways take on things that are going on in America right now that are making it hard to know, you know, what is reality and the influence of technology, gaming, AI. And the show literally does get into gaming, but for me, I mean, it works as a metaphor for how just everything is turning into this level of unreality. Yeah, a disconnect between our actions and the consequences of our actions, which I think technology can create this disconnect, you know, where you just don't really see it because we're all separate and atomized on our little devices.
Yeah, We Can Really Feel Like We're Here is it's from a Facebook VR demo. That's one of the lines from it. So it's basically an advertising slogan. But the set came together when we were invited to play a festival for video game music. What was the name of the festival again, Mark?
MAGFest.
Yes, big festival for gaming music. And, if Negative Land's sort of meta ethos is media literacy and trying to figure out what sort of what the message is with each successive medium, one of the ones that gets kind of missed by a lot of people, I just noticed that almost everybody over 45 at one point grew out of playing video games, and everybody under 45, well, the medium, the technology of storytelling intrinsic to video games got so sophisticated that nobody under 45 ever had to grow out of playing them because the storytelling got sufficiently adult to keep you going. So everybody under 45 is walking around with a completely different set of media references and stories that they've been told. And the generation gap that we often talk about with the internet is just as much a media gap, where people over 45 simply don't don't understand the references to Metal Gear Solid 2 or Red Dead Redemption 2. It's a
yeah, John, I still don't, because I'm over 45, and so are you, and so is most of our audience.
Right. So this is where Mark's lines about all of this being a metaphor come in, because if
well,
the
it
set
works
is
multiple levels, which is for me, you know, where anything we do that rises to the level of feeling negative landish, it's like it has to work at a whole bunch of different levels of smart, dumb, funny, sad, serious, silly. You know, is it literal? Is it a metaphor? Is it an analogy? And once we did this show, specifically created for this festival, after we all sat around and we co-created the thing with Susie doing the visuals and then Ryan Worsley, the filmmaker who made the documentary about Negative Land, Stand By for Failure, she contributed an enormous amount of visual layers that Sue then put into her stew and folded in. But anyway, after we all sat around the next day and watched the video capture of what Sue had been doing live in the show and listened to the sound. And I just remember, I think it hit all of us like, wow, this need with some more tweaking, this isn't just a one-off show. This actually could be our next show. I think this is going to have more legs than just this one time. And so that's what this is. And I do think that most of it, what do you think, John, that most of it's going to be retired after the election? It really feels like it's a show, you know, responding to America in this moment we're in, of dark, you know, insanity that we're in leading up to November 5th.
I think no matter which way the election goes, the game is going to continue.
Well, that's not too dark.
That is true. That is true. You're right.
Well, I'm curious how this, you know, I really appreciate what you're saying about the way that the medium has changed, the way the gaming medium, you know, you're talking about people under 45 not understanding specific references, but I also noticed that when I talk to people who are younger, especially I've talked to people who have kids that are teenagers, and they say, I can't watch a movie. I watch a movie that begins and ends in an hour and a half. I can't relate to that narrative. Everything is brought up too quickly. Everything is resolved too quickly. I need to see something that evolves over time. And that something that's that compressed doesn't feel real to me.
Well, interesting. That is the opposite of what I would have expected. So I'm thank you for sharing that. That's fascinating. Wow. Because of how long, over hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of gameplay, you slowly unpack what's going on in the whatever universe the game is set in.
Right, right.
These games last 25 to 150 hours, but more importantly, there's interactivity. So they are responding in some ways to the passive nature of film storytelling.
Gosh, I feel like for me, my media interactivity is the fact that I'm in this group that takes media and then swallows it, you know, after chewing it all up and spits it back out into some new form. That's kind of our activity, our media activity. We got asked a great question during the Q&A after the showing of the doc here. We're in Allentown, Pennsylvania right now. We got to play at this incredibly beautiful historic theater, the 19th Street Theater. And yes, someone asked, like, with all of the media you have to, you know, ingest to be able to make your work, you know, how do you detoxify from it? And, you know, one answer, there's different answers, but one answer was, well, it's by making this work. It's by doing what we do. That's our way of processing and trying to understand. We're trying to figure all this crap out just as much as anyone else, you know, who has a thinking brain. And so I think our process of trying to, I mean, and I can see that going back to the very beginning of the group is that somehow this act of appropriation, which is itself or was transgressive, it isn't anymore, but it was, and that was exciting. But then it was this way of trying to understand like all this information and advertising and media and propaganda and just the craziness that we're in the middle of when we have, you know, all five TV channels, you know, back in the day. now there's 500 channels. So there's a lot more to digest.
But when you read these despairing, hand-wringing New York Times stories about tribalism in America and how we have two totally separate media narratives going on, two options, left or right-wing media ecosystems.
Yeah, there's only two that are allowed, just two.
Yeah, everything's got to be binary.
Oh yeah.
Those articles largely miss the point. There's something very different about storytelling in video games that has gone back and raised an entirely new generation of people and has led to a format called the alternative reality game. Alternative reality games are sculpted much like LARPing, or you know, what our generation called Dungeons and Dragons or role-playing games. Alternative reality games are played online using the same social media platforms and UIs that most people just use to express themselves. But you use the UIs that real people use in order to get that much more immersed into the reality of the game you're playing. What this means for everybody who isn't playing the game is that they aren't aware of who and who is not playing the game. And once you understand this, politics begins to make a lot more sense. Things like Trump, for some people, are a game. For other people, they are not a game. It's not a game. None of this is a game. And it's not two media ecosystems. It's several generations. Some of them are used to a storytelling format, which is much less passive and much more active than anyone's really accounting for in the modern media landscape.
Or we could just do a whole show that's our attempt at a bunch of love songs. That seems to never be the thing we end up doing.
Because there's
enough of them out there. I love a good love song, but no, there's so many bazillions of them that it's like, is there a whole album all about Pepsi advertising that anyone's going to make? Nope. So I guess we've got to do it. It's our mission, you know.
So anyway, yeah, that's about enough information to frame whatever it is we're doing, and it's probably is our next album. But we're playing it in very different ways. This is a very luxurious way of breaking in all of the material. Like, there's definitely a set list, and there's sort of like we move through the basic family of text samples each night. But of course, we're triggering them all live, so they end up in different orders, different timings. They come out in radically different ways each night. So we're going to end up with 12 different versions of the same album at the end of this tour, and then we'll try to come up with the best of all possible worlds at the end of it.
And I used to have a list of the sounds I would use in my setup for each section of the show, but I've largely just don't follow that list anymore. It's because John and I are very interested in keeping it real, you know, and keeping it very live and very improvised and very much in the moment. So I'm kind of foregoing that to a large degree, and I'm just like, okay, tonight I'm going to try this, and I think this could work, let me try that, and then just, you know, and then we're both, you know, listening intensely to each other, and so the show unfolds. We've done four or five shows so far on this little short tour, and it's the same show, but man, each show is really different. It surprises me how different. Last night there were whole sections of the show that just kind of popped out of nowhere, and we had brief little insta mini compositions that lasted for a minute or two before we moved on to the next sort of official section of the show. And those are always just so much fun when that happens. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. So some tracks, like, you know, the meaning goes deeper if you have two voices that have nothing to do with each other, basically in conversation going back and forth. So sometimes we try to have them as a dialogue, but you know, some of these tapes are so powerful, they need to be the lead vocal for a track. So sometimes, you know, on some nights they're the lead vocalist, and other times they're we're just trying to find a home for all these different
and another
people
thing
who have never even heard of each other.
From doing the show and from listening to recordings of the shows we've done live, and then from talking to audience members and friends of ours who, you know, who are critical, whose opinions we trust, it also became clear that having moments, the show's very information dense, which is one reason why it's really great to be seated when you take it all in. There's a lot to take in, but we gradually realized, for various, you know, reasons I just described, that it was a good idea to let the show breathe a little more and have moments where we stop all the barrage of cut up voices and we just kind of, you know, go instrumental for even 30 seconds or a minute or two and just kind of let people rest. Sue's visuals are always so beautiful and are so amazing and unique looking. So they kind of do the heavy lifting for the show, especially when we're if we sort of stop playing all the voice tapes and then we move on, you know, and your brain starts to get filled up with stuff again.
I'm curious, given what you're talking about with there being potentially so many different versions of the same show and how it changes every night. Have you heard about this this documentary about Brian Eno that a filmmaker named Gary Huswit has put together?
Yes.
I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it either, but the part that I'm thinking about is that he's using some sort of proprietary algorithm that he's come up with that makes a different version of the film every night. So you could see it at four different theaters and see four different iterations of the film, and some scenes will have, the different screenings will have in common, and some you'll only see in one screening. I mean, I realize that may be an order of magnitude more complicated than you're even interested in doing for a record release, but is that something you would ever consider?
Oh, it's easy to do it with a record release. Like if you just, it's gotten a lot easier to release 15 different versions of the same record. I'm a big fan of Autechre's live releases.
I give that a big thumbs down. I want to commit to saying this is the work. I mean, John may disagree, and I'm not saying there is no boss in Negative Land. It's all very non-hierarchical, anarchistic. But I think putting out other mixes for fun to let people hear other versions. We did it with True False. The vinyl version of True False had, the album is on three sides, and the fourth side is actually some very, very different versions of some other that we had come up with that we just thought were fun to fill up that third side with.
Yeah, and I regret that fourth side very much. That's another example of something that was really a bad idea. But No, I'm not talking about having the album be 15 different live sets. I want to commit to a
version, and that's what we put out into the world.
It will be a studio version, but no, the internet, there's a lot of room for uploads, and there's a lot of room for live sets, which are their own sort of subculture, you know. What Eno means to me is generative music, and his frustration that he had to put out one version of music for Airports One, or that there's only one version of Thursday Afternoon, when of course the piece itself is an endlessly recombining series of loops that always land in different orders. So the message of that documentary, it seems like form equals function. Here's the ways it can be different every time you watch it and still be interesting. And I'm very interested in that being this tour, like every single version of our next album on this live tour will be unique to the location. Anybody who shows up is going to be seeing something that really is happening for the first time there. But recordings of those nights are also going to be the only time it ever happens. And every single time you play any of those recordings, that's going to be the only time you ever play that recording. And it sounds exactly like that.
Yeah, in a way, Jeff, the answer to your question is that is what we're doing with the actual show itself as we tour it, is that we do leave ourselves extremely open to, and I think it's because we played together for so long and trust each other especially having done thousands of hours of live improvised radio. It's on our Over the Edge radio show. It's all about the segue. It's all about listening. It's all about working together to make the thing work. And if it suddenly goes in an unexpected direction, your job is to listen and not be attached to where you thought it was going, but to sort of, as they say, follow the puck where it's instead going, and, you know, the other direction, and just to make, you may make some radical right or left turn in the mix, the sound, you just got to make it work. And we've done that so long. It's pretty instinctual. Another thing I just wanted to add that I think is kind of funny and to me typical for Negative Land is that it's the ass backwardness of it, is that we're not out performing our new album. You know, we're not out promoting this album we've released. We're out figuring out what our next album is. And then when we finally release the album, we will stop performing all the pieces. We won't do them anymore. But I like that. And I think that the show, which has been honed for 2 years now, has gotten this latest iteration. John brought in a bunch of new voice tapes into some of the pieces that just upped the strength of them, and the complexity and the power and the humor, like, just took the whole show, went up like another, not, you know, like another 15-20% got better. And we've even, gosh, Sue is appearing virtually in all of our shows via the laptop, not in person. We played with Sue in Houston last December doing this show, and she does record her, you know, what she does live with us. And she did some things that were so good that we actually swapped out some of the visuals we're using in the show with new, like the visuals got all a huge upgrade as well. So again, it makes it feel alive and organic and, you know, evolving in a way that feels good.
Yeah, the thing I was thinking about as you're saying this is you could always set up, like, it would take a little bit of programming, but you could set up something on, say, Bandcamp, where every time you downloaded a different iteration and there was a certain amount of randomness. But it would also take your control over it away, and that is part of what is making the shape of it interesting.
Sure. Well, you probably know the vinyl version of Matching Tie and Handkerchief by Monty Python, and
yes,
how one of the sides is two concentric grooves that are totally different album sides, and
right,
they don't tell you this, and you only gradually figure it out from dropping the needle. I mean, that is, oh my God, so such a genius, great, you know, breaking the rules sort of thing.
That actually kind of broke my, I just have to say, that kind of broke my brain when I had that record when it came out. I checked it out from the library, and I could not understand why, when I put the needle down, it wasn't playing the thing that I wanted to play. I really thought that I was going a certain kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's so good. Such, man. Yeah, very, just that alone, no matter what the content is, just that they did that and did not say anything about it, is just, you can, you know, love them for that, you know, so inspiring.
Yeah, there are many more options beyond that for coded algorithmic mixes of a piece that is different every single time you press play. One of the favorite releases I've ever been released in is a realization of John Cage's The 10,000 Things, in which the CD version has four different performances of it, but it's mixed from... the piece had four different duos, and the CD is one fixed version of it, but there's also, the CD comes with a key drive, and you put the key drive in, and every single time you press play, it will throw a random number generator and play you a different mix out of all the different performances of it. And that was me and William Winant, and I forget some of the other, like John Schneider of the Microtonal Music Society, and a recording of John Cage giving his lecture from 1958. And that is if you're lucky enough to find the USB version of that CD release, then that's the version.
I'll have to find that sounds incredible. I wasn't aware that existed.
It got nominated for a Grammy, but it didn't win. But yeah, I wish that one had gotten out there more. I mean, a lot of what people are excited about with, machine learning is the idea of live streams that are continuous. I'm a fan of the group DataBots that, I guess 5 years now it's been running, a live stream of spontaneously generated death metal. And it's you could say it's a 5 year long piece of music, but is it live music? It's still only a recording. It's not precisely live, but it is effectively infinite as long as we keep feeding the renderers water and electricity.
Fascinating.
That sounds like a lot of water you gotta feed those computers.
Well, you know, whether or not that's worth doing is an undecided issue, which I might come down against. But while it's here, you don't want your music to be lying to you. And that is what's happening. AI does death metal pretty well.
That's a good quote. I like that.
Well, one other thing I was just curious about that, you know, we're talking about gaming and the interactive nature of some of these games. And some of them, there's one that I read about where part of the fact of the interaction is that you have only a limited number of options. You don't know this at first as you're playing, but as you get into it, you realize that there's really no good answer for how this part of the game is going to end. You have to do something awful that has some sort of moral component to it, or something that's ethically dubious.
Just like real life.
Yeah.
But
being an American, stepping out your front door and turning on absolutely anything in your house or your car, you're doing something that's really morally problem, ethically, environmentally, really deeply problematic, simply by existing. It's true.
Or it's just, as the main quote in the penultimate track of our set, vote to take your country back.
Yeah, that's right. Negative Land is actually going to maybe sort of kind of remind you to vote, except who's that voice that's saying that and what's their agenda when they were saying it?
Back from what?
Back. Absolutely. Back from what? Back from death, John, I believe is the answer.
But no, as to your question, the way these games are designed, most of the games are sort of have a funnel design where there is a fairly bound story that you're trying to tell, and there are countless decisions offered to you, but the more you play the game, the more you realize that the decisions that you're being offered don't really matter. The same thing happens to you in the end. Some games are far more open world, and the questions of how do you do storytelling in a world where you're giving people as many choices as possible, how does that work?
The one video game I truly enjoy, I think everyone in Negative Land would agree, is Katamari Damacy, because it is the most pointless, just a game where you're just trying to roll, get stuff stuck to you so you can get bigger. That's all it is. And it is so delightfully stupid and pointless. I love it. It's just
far from pointless. Talk about agency. Talk about agency. And talk
all right,
about
we will disagree.
Trying to gain your father's love, and your father is the king of the universe, but your father is a drunkard. Yeah,
if you could get to the end of the game. I couldn't get past. How big did I? I don't know. I never got that big. But
you never rolled up the earth.
No, wow. I never got to the point of rolling up the earth. I just sort of got to the point where I think I was rolling up giant whales and octopuses.
That's pretty close to the end. That is definitely.
Oh, okay. I don't know. It's Yeah, Tom made me play it, and I was just I was shocked at how much I enjoyed it.
It's an important game, yes.
All right. Well, I would love to continue this. We are a bit out of time, so I kind of have to wrap it up. But we will very much look forward to seeing you at the drive-in on May 31st.
Yeah, we're super excited about this show. We're super excited to spend time at Wave Farm and get to learn more about what they're doing there. We've been aware of them for a long time, and what they do is so unique, and just there's like nothing in it in the world that I'm aware of, really, or certainly in the United States. And yes, that we're going to be with our buddies Matmos. We look forward to seeing what Rodney Greenblatt's going to do. Yeah, but this is going to be unique certainly for us, and maybe for everybody else. And if it rains, I guess you'll be watching our show from in your car with your windshield wipers on. And I just hope they have some battery chargers for anyone who kills their battery watching all the. Oh, and it'll be live on the radio on this radio station.
That's
so
right.
That's how people will hear it in their car at the drive-in. But if you're at home anywhere in the world, I guess it'll be streaming. You'll be able to hear the whole evening live, right? Is that right?
That's correct. Live simulcast. Tune in.
Oh, we'll have to make that one a really unique one then. Yeah. Sounds great.